Welcome to the Navigating the Noise podcast. First-hand stories and winning ideas from marketing department leaders. And now, here's your host, Jerry Alaka.
Hi there. Thanks for joining me on the Navigating the Noise podcast, brought to you by Connected Culture, an award-winning digital marketing agency obsessed with conversions. I'm your host, Jerry Alaka, and this is the first and only podcast to put the spotlight on the unsung heroes of the marketing world as we navigate the noise of modern marketing. Today's episode is about product marketing, and I'm thrilled to have Lindsay Drum join us. We'll take us through the ins and outs, as well as what nobody ever tells you about product marketing. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Lindsay, tell us a little about yourself.
Okay, so I'm a professional in the marketing and advertising communications world. I've been in this industry for over 20 years now, most recently as a director of marketing at Plymouth Rock Energy, which is an energy supplier of gas and electric for homes and business. Prior to that, I had a 10-year run at Geneva Watch Group in the product marketing of watches, licensed and owned brands. And before that, in my very early career, I was an art director, starting out in an advertising agency on the creative side of things. So that's me in a nutshell. I like to say I am a split personality in the best way of both creative and strategic. Throughout my career, I've grown from art direction to strategy planning and overseeing the marketing plans and programs for product and service.
So Geneva Watches, that's a luxury product to a very specific niche audience. Tell us a little about that.
Okay, so Geneva has previously now gone bankrupt, but prior to that, they were the manufacturer, distributor, retailer, marketer, all in one with factories in, you know, overseas and headquarters in New York. So the watches were sold high-end retail luxury stores, and then some brands were sold in Target and Walmart and the major retailers throughout Macy's and such. And it was interesting because we had so many brands and so many watches, you know, literally thousands of watches that we were trying to sell and market worldwide. So there were a lot of different targets, a lot of different channels, both traditional as well as, you know, new digital methods, influencers, bloggers, events, things that all came to fruition, street teams outside of Macy's Herald Square, you know, a lot of in-store point of sale buzz, if you will. And it was definitely interesting. And it was an all-in-one collaboration, which was nice. I think when I went there, I had never worked for a manufacturer before. And finding out that you could get on the phone with, or, you know, jump over to another office and speak to someone that's part of the distribution team in the warehouse or the factory in China or the planning, procurement and financial team. So it was all hands in. And that's what I really thrived on in that environment, the collaboration.
So thousands of products, that can't be easy, but you can't really market thousands of products. So how do you pick and choose which ones get the attention and which ones get less attention?
Right, exactly. And that's always going to come down to money. Budget is a large factor right there, simply because of the licensed brands that had budgets that were committed to spending each season or each year, depending on how they outlined it. It would sound good in theory, here's $6 million to market Kenneth Cole watches, but at the same time, you're contractually obligated to do so. And that always went off as easy as it sounds to spend that kind of money. But yes, it depended on the brand size, the license contract, and what they allocated towards marketing dollars or advertising dollars. And we had to manage that as a marketing team where we put our focus. And although each brand was important, like stepchildren or regular children, they all want the attention and they all scream louder than the other. So we did devise, you know, a method that worked at times where we split up team members to concentrate on certain brands. And then obviously the owned brands, which was under the Geneva label or labels, we obviously had an obligation there as well to upper management to make sure we spend time on them.
So what was interfering with getting your message to your market? What was the noise that you had to overcome?
I think there was a lot of contamination, if you will, just some confusion with getting a simple watch in front of other consumers and competing with other products and other categories. For example, we did work on, we had an over 10-year contract with the Kenneth Cole brand, and they had 36 categories under Kenneth Cole Productions, and that's handbags and shoes and every other accessory you could imagine, obviously. Right. But we were the watch expert, you know, Geneva was the watch expert. But trying to get ahead of other product categories where a watch sounds not as important to the full fashion world of, you know, accessories, it was difficult. You know, there were times that it just didn't make sense. People didn't want to spend the money on a watch. And unless you were a collector, and actually spending the kind of money on the watches that were collector pieces. And that was in a whole nother category in our world. They're few and far between. It just seemed like, you know, there was a lot of competition.
So I know the whole watch market has changed dramatically. And look, it's not easy to compete with Apple, is it? So tell me about the most critical issues that you see facing, not just, you know, the watch marketing, but product marketing in general. What are the most critical issues that product marketing must address today?
I think today, now with everything that's come to fruition in the technology world or the cultural world of TikTok and such, it's become for me a little bit too much, to be honest. I think there's a point where TikTok works, but I don't agree with it in every product category.
I love how you're saying that, because everybody says, oh, you have to be on Facebook, you have to be on this, you have to be on that. And you know, the way I see it, you have to look at your numbers. You have to look at your conversions, right, and your conversion rates and your cost per lead and cost per acquisition. And that should be telling you what you need to do more of and what you need to be doing less of. So tell me about the biggest potential challenges you see coming in the next few years for product marketing.
I would have to say, based on where we are globally with the pandemic and where we are in the United States with unemployment rates and people struggling, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a hard road to get back to consumers spending. And, you know, it's a hard topic when, do you really need to buy that XYZ when I can't put food on my table? And while some people think, oh, that's not real, it's not happening, it is. Some of us are lucky where we don't really feel the impact, but I do think it's going to be a hard road to get back on spending and consumers going out there and buying products as much as they were prior to this. If anything, being stuck at home, it kind of opens your eyes to saying, what do I really need? And tossing out, you know, a whole bunch of garbage bags because I thought my kids didn't need all these crazy toys, or donating them out. It made me realize how much stuff we have and what we don't need. So I think the focus will be on figuring out what we really need, what product categories are important, that maybe were important once, but not so important anymore. So yeah, I think it's going to be.
That sounds like navigating the noise to me.
Yes. Exactly.
So tell me about energy. You were telling me about energy.
So it was interesting. I brought some of my background in product marketing to the service industry there, simply because we were focusing on relaunching the website and making more of the enrollments a priority. And we did. We did very well with increasing the online enrollments through the website. Mm-hmm. I think by doing a cool product feature, which is more like a shopping cart that was never done in the energy space before, where you kind of put a t-shirt in your shopping cart when you're shopping on whatever website you like, and you think about it, maybe I'll come back for that shirt. I don't know if I really need it. Tomorrow I'll look at it again, and it just stays in the shopping cart. Kind of did that with energy, you know, as a residential homeowner, I'm sitting at work during my lunch break, checking out rates, and I'm going to save that rate in my shopping cart because I'm going to go home, find my bill, or speak to my partner and say, do we need to reduce this cost that we have for our lights or our electricity in our home? So you could save that rate for 24 hours, which was something not normally done because, again, the market controls the price. And as a commodity, it would change. But we did a 24-hour hold. You could come back once you got your account number, went home and found your bill, whatever you needed to do, and come back and still have that rate secured.
That's really interesting. So it sounds like you're taking the world of product marketing and merging it together with the world of service marketing. Pretty right. Cool. So tell me about the key differences that you've seen between product marketing and service marketing.
So, okay, that is always the human connection, I think. When you have product and it is something you could feel, touch, eat, drink, wear, whatever it may be, there's that human connection touch. I think for the service marketing, where yes, there was the residential book, but there was also the commercial and industrial book, brokers were out there making those relationships with the commercial and buildings in Manhattan or what have you. They were the ones that were negotiating the deal and weren't so much using marketing as a tool. It was more of, I'm going to take you out to lunch and we're going to figure out this deal based on numbers, whichever broker they like better at the time. So I think there isn't a connection of what you could wear or feel or touch because gas and electric is not touchable, tangible, whatever. So it's a little difficult. It's a little bit of a price point, a way of thinking about something, where can I save money? Because everybody wants to save money, right? When it comes to their costs at their home or their business. So it's a definite difference when it comes to human touch and feel or connection based solely on cost savings or cost reduction. But there's a challenge.
Certainly sounds like a challenge.
Right.
So as many people know, this podcast is all about marketing leaders helping other marketing leaders. So what's your best advice for another marketing leader?
I would have to say, think about how right now I'm in between jobs, right? And I'm searching for a new role. And they say, it's not always what you know, it's who you know. Keep that open connection, open communication with people, try different things. If you're lucky enough to work in an environment where there's other departments and other people that have brains, they will have ideas that you might not think of just because you're a marketing person. It's not to take away from your skill or talent, it's to enhance that idea. So I think I was lucky enough to be able to collaborate with a lot of different departments. And why didn't I think of that? Kind of light bulb would go off because I saw something from a perspective of a different person in a different role that was touching the same greater good that I was at that company. So open your mind, allow other people in the company or in the situation that you're in for the agency or the company that you're working for, allow collaboration to happen and don't let your ego get in the way that you're the only one that could do the marketing. You can have help, you can have input, and it will work for you and the greater good.
I like that. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, good things come from talking to good people, and you just need to talk to more people and you know, things happen.
Exactly.
So tell me about the most successful product marketing campaign that you've ever run.
Oh, I would have to say it was the touchscreen watch that we launched for the Kenneth Cole brand at Geneva Watch Group. It was like a 9-month pregnancy. It was a very long, arduous process from, you know, the product itself that needed to be right in order to be a touchscreen watch that was going to be the first in the fashion category. We thought we had what we needed in that long, almost year journey. And when we launched it, we were so excited. And less than 2 months later, Apple launched the iWatch. So while it was the greatest high and we had so much behind it and we did so many great things, there was also the low of the Apple Watch coming out and taking away our thunder, if you will. the same time, we had over 22 million impressions. We were featured on gift guides for the Today Show and Good Morning America. And it had a lot of buzz around it. It was, you know, some bloggers, some fashion bloggers were able to get them in the hands of some celebrities. Halle Berry was, you know, photographed wearing one. So there was a lot of interesting stuff going on there. It was a cool technology at the time. I'm dating myself. It was almost 10 years ago. It was a nice high for me. Yes.
So Halle Berry, people refer to that as influencer marketing, although nowadays the trend is micro influencer marketing, just somebody who has a strong connection to maybe a few hundred people rather than weak connections to millions and millions of people. So did you employ any influencer marketing strategies in the product marketing world?
We did, and we had a huge push around it. We were lucky enough as a New York brand to be able to connect with the Elvis Duran morning show and their celebrities, if you will, Elvis himself, Danielle Monero, a whole bunch of them that was on the team over there. We got the watches in their hands. They talked about it nonstop. They photographed, they blogged about it, they posted about it. There was a lot going on. You know, obviously they spoke about it on the radio. They were great sources for us to bring it to fruition. Their events like Jingle Ball and another one that they did during the summer. There was just so many times that we had connection with the consumers through these, you know, celebrities and radio celebrities. But we did do an influencer campaign as well with fashion bloggers. So we did use them to get the product out there for sure.
Would you say that was one of your primary marketing strategies, or was it a secondary?
I think it was primary at the time, simply because we were doing digital buys. So obviously we had, you know, a network of where we would run ads and such, but Elvis Duran really picked up on it. And then they became part of that iHeartMedia group, which then we were able to funnel off of. So it started out definitely as the primary, and then trickled down to a whole bunch of other secondary and tertiary. So
in the past, what have you seen from others that you would consider mistakes to avoid?
I would have to say not knowing what you're working on. As far as, you know, I came from a design background. So I was an art director. And when I was lucky enough to have a mentor that really pushed me and challenged me into more of the strategic side of marketing and having a seat at the table and bringing my ideas, I was able to oversee the creative team and still know what it took to get a 100-page product catalog out, whether it was in InDesign, Photoshop, Illustrator, what have you. I knew what it took to sit down and do it because I had been there before. I had done that role. I had, you know, obviously been promoted through and was able to speak to it and say, no, that takes 3 hours, not 3 minutes. So I think as far as mistakes, I had a previous boss who was a VP status and didn't know what it really truly took to get the work done, because they were at an executive level and they weren't in the nitty gritty and they had never been there before. So I think, you know, knowing what it takes to get the job done and doing that type of work prior really helps, because you can understand and relate and get the project done correctly.
You know, what you just said is exactly why I say that this podcast is for the unsung heroes, because The executives, the boss, the, you know, even on our side, you know, clients, they don't understand the details. They don't understand all the little things that go into it. And they say, just do Facebook, just do TikTok. Why are we not on TikTok? Just do it.
Exactly. Know?
Understand the planning and the strategy and then the tactics and all the little details that go into not just making it work, but making it work well. And thank you for that.
Yes, of course. No, and that's why I always think that way, because I pride myself on knowing where I came from and knowing my capabilities. I would never throw myself into a role in the finance department, because quite honestly, I would be lost. And I wouldn't be able to tell anyone else how to do it right, because I had never done it before. So I think just knowing your role and knowing where you came from and, you know, being able to do it and speak to it is important.
That's great. So tell me about, you mentioned a mentor. Is that something you would recommend for people to find a mentor?
Yeah, I do. I didn't know it at the time, because it was happening so organically for me. I had spent, like I said, almost 10 years at Geneva Watch Group, and she had been hired 1 month before me. So we were both there at the same time going through a lot of the changes that were happening there. And although I started off in the creative space of the marketing team, she really pushed me. And at first I was a little nervous and scared, like, what are you doing, lady? You got me like doing things I never, you know, went to school for. I have no knowledge of, I have no way of knowing how to do this. But she kept ensuring me, listen, you have a voice here because I believe in you and I like your ideas. And when we meet, it's great. So while you can do the creative and you've proven that, how about you bring your ideas more of a top level, come to these meetings, sit down with the brand managers, tell them what you think. And I want you to have that voice and that chance. And then it was just from there, so easy. And it was natural. And I said, okay, you're right. And so she continued to push me and promote me through more into then I ended up being the global marketing manager. So yeah, I mean, if that happens and if there's a chance for it, it's so important. It means so much to the everyday grind of knowing that you have more to offer than what you originally thought you ever did. And some people are okay with staying in the same role throughout their entire career or, you know, doing the same exact thing every single day. And that's fine. We need people like that. But if you're not that person or in the marketing world, take that chance, take that risk to go with someone and be under their, you know, under their nose, under their shoulder, under their arm, wherever, and say, can I follow you around and see what's going on? Because I like what you do. And I want to learn more about it as well.
Mm. Yeah, and it sounds like a mentor is not just somebody to learn from, but it's somebody who understands you and appreciates you. And right. I think that's, you know, we need to see more of that.
Yes, agreed.
If somebody wants to contact you, where would you send them?
I would say LinkedIn is the best way. So either look me up on LinkedIn or we can connect through the notes. I'll put my link there for my profile and looking forward to connect with anybody that's interested.
Great. Thanks so much. Enjoy the day.
You too, Jerry. Take care. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for checking out Navigating the Noise podcast. Subscribe today by clicking the subscribe button or visit navigatingthenoise.com to subscribe via email. On our website, you can access the show notes, resources, and links from today's episode to help you take action on what was discussed. Also, you can ask Jerry questions that he may reply to on the show. Plus, if you're a leader in your marketing department and would like to be a guest, you can contact us through the site. It's really easy. Just visit navigatingthenoise.com to subscribe, watch episodes, ask Jerry anything, or to be a guest. Until next time, stay safe, navigate wisely.